This is Fresh Air. Sometimes when a band breaks up, the careers of its members end too. But that hasn't been the case with my guest, John Doe. He was one of the founders of the band X, which was at the forefront of the L.A. punk and new wave scene in the late 70s and 80s. 2 summers ago, he released his first solo album, Meet John Doe. And he's been pursuing his acting career. He stars in the new independent film Roadside Prophets, and he appeared in the film Salvador, Slam Dance, Roadhouse, and Great Balls of Fire, in which he played Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin and bass player. Here's how John Doe sounded with X in the early 80s. John Doe's new movie, Roadside Prophets, is a road movie. He plays a loner traveling through the West on his motorcycle, meeting a parade of eccentrics played by Arlo Guthrie, Timothy Leary, David Carradine, and John Cusack. John Doe told me how he got the part.
Well, I think Abby Wool, the writer and director, had sort of thought of me as playing Joe, the character that is in Roadside Prophets. And Adam Horovitz and I sort of hit it off. Chemistry, I think they call it in the biz, and it happened.
Do you know how to ride a bike, or is this something you had to learn for the movie?
I did learn it for the movie. I'd ridden one maybe 5 years or 8 years before, twice, and then I had to fly back and forth from Arizona and wherever we were playing to Los Angeles to learn, and it was pretty frightening.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, I'm a real coward when it comes to motorcycles.
Well, I don't own one. I figured that this was the best experience you could have on a motorcycle. Someone else was maintaining it. It showed up at the set, and it was all ready to go. You didn't have to ride in the city, which is, to me, the antithesis of why you would have a motorcycle.
Do you think that the roles you've been given have been influenced at all by your image as a musician and singer?
I think that opened the door. Unfortunately, most of the scripts that people get are exactly who they appear to be in their other career, which is kind of silly. I think Adam Horovitz and I could do like a real honest to goodness musical comedy. I think that would be interesting, or make Adam Horovitz an absolute maniacal criminal, a homicidal maniac.
You have a solo career now as a musician. Do you think the songs you're writing are different from the songs you did with X?
John Doe's songs are more personal.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have as group-oriented lyrical content. But X is working on a new album, so I'm sort of back with that approach.
Oh, so the group is reunited or reuniting?
We reuned. In between Christmas and New Year's of 1990, I believe it was. And we played a few shows and then got a deal and found a producer, and we're going to start recording in April. So far, the album is titled Serendipitous Suck Up. and then I had another title my daughter gave me the other night, which was A Tiny Drip of Slow and a Big Bowl of Fast. So, I don't know.
Not bad.
Yeah.
How old is she?
4.
Pretty good.
Yeah, she's helped me write a few songs now. she'll get the benefits.
I want to play something from the John Doe record that came out a few months ago. I thought we'd hear Dying to Get Home, one of the songs you wrote. Do you want to say anything about it?
It's your basic Hank Williams song written in a hotel room.
Hank Williams, one of your influences?
I think he's got to be almost everyone's influence, since he was the first live fast, die young, leave a beautiful memory.
Did you or do you believe in that?
No.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm too old to do that.
Exactly. Did you once believe in that?
No, but it's intriguing. It's romantic.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, this is Dying to Get Home from John Doe's album, Meet John Doe.
I'm just dying to get home. Smoking up a cigarette. I got a nickel in my pocket, a heartache on the phone. As I crawl into this bottle, I'm just dying to get home. Maybe someday I'll feel better.
If you're just joining us, my guest is John Doe. He's a singer, songwriter, guitarist, former founding member of the group X, now an actor as well, and co-starring in the new movie Roadside Prophets. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. John Doe is my guest. You were born in Illinois, in Decatur, but you also lived in Knoxville and Madison, and then you were a teenager in Baltimore, I believe. How did you end up traveling around so much when you were young?
My father was a librarian. He got better and better jobs. He ended up at the Brooklyn Public Library as the director. He's a good man.
So does that mean there were a lot of books in your life that you read a lot?
Yeah, they used to bring home about a 15-book stack for me to read over summer vacation, none of which I would open. And then I sort of figured out that they were worth something at age 20.
Did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to a year of college and then quit. Put on aluminum siding for 2 years in Baltimore, and then I went back to Antioch College that had a writing program.
Were your parents upset when you temporarily dropped out? You know, being librarians, I'm sure. They took education very seriously.
You could say that they were upset. That might be an understatement. But, I mean, I was of age. I could do what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. So you finished college in Antioch?
Yeah.
And then went to Los Angeles?
About 2 or 3 years after that, yeah.
And did you go to Los Angeles with the idea of being in a band?
I went to Los Angeles with the idea of making music, maybe being a songwriter, not particularly driven towards live performance. But then, you know, I got there in 1976, and there were all these other displaced musicians that didn't have a venue to express themselves at, and we all sort of made a movement.
So do you feel that you reinvented yourself when you went to Los Angeles and when X was founded?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that why everybody goes to the West Coast? So they can adopt a new identity?
Was John Doe the name that you took when you started the band, or had you already taken on the name?
I had actually thought of the name after working with some poets in Washington, D.C., and John Waters, meeting him and hanging out with him.
I think there's a really interesting phenomenon that, you know, probably a lot of us have been part of at some point in our lives, of people who are basically from the middle class who at a certain point when they're younger just really leave a lot of middle-class comforts and middle-class values behind and try for a completely different kind of life. A kind of life outside of class, if is the way you'd like to define it. Do you feel that was part of the transformation you went through in Los Angeles during the X period?
I would say it's sort of the opposite of a 12-step program. You know, I don't reject what my parents taught me, but at this, and I'm not rebelling against them, but I didn't want to be that. And so experience is a wonderful thing, experience and discovery. And that's what I think motivates a lot of people to try things.
So, I mean, you were a pretty literary guy, a poet, songwriter. Parents were a librarian, playing this really innovative music that was kind of grouped into punk, whether you considered it to be punk or not. And I think you had this really interesting mixture of fans. Some of them were people who were really into punk rock. A lot of music critics were the first to really appreciate
second.
It. The second, right.
The
yeah,
second.
Second, okay. Was there anything about some of your fans that you didn't relate to or didn't understand, or any kind of behavior at concerts that you didn't enjoy?
Certainly. There were people that didn't understand why they were there. And it was mostly in later days, in, say, 82 to 85, where people still thought that spitting on stage was cool, which it never was. Maybe in England it was for about 6 weeks. Or, stage diving, which became, it's still around, but it started by skateboarders who were unbelievably adept or adroit. What would be the word? They could get on stage and they could twirl around and do flips and not even touch one drink on the stage and then dive off and not hurt themselves and not hurt anybody else. And then these people that are, 200 pounds are getting up and diving onto a bunch of people from a stack of speakers, so yeah, it's just weird. And but anytime it got seriously out of hand, or people were in danger of getting hurt, we would stop and say, "Don't do that, because you're going to get hurt, and you're not going to enjoy it." But on the other hand, I have a feeling that people would like to do that so they could go back to high school the next morning and say, "Oh, wow, man, I was at this X concert, and, like, look at these scars. Look, I was, like, bleeding all over the place, man, and it was so cool. I split my head open, and, like, I hurt all these other people. And I was like, oh, wow, man, you should have been there."
Did you meet people who would really talk like that after a concert? Probably.
I tried not to, but unfortunately I had to.
Puts you in an awkward position if you have to stop playing when things get, too rowdy in the audience. It puts you into the position of being authority figure instead of just performer.
That's okay.
You don't mind
just,
that?
Just say, it's like, I can't say the words on the radio, but it's like, cut it out. It's like being responsible with your friends.
So you didn't feel like the teacher on stage or something?
Occasionally. You know? But I didn't care.
Uh-huh.
I'd rather see people not get hurt and maybe seem foolish. The funniest thing that would happen would be the promoter would try to come up and say something, and of course the audience wouldn't react at all to them. They'd just boo them and try to throw them off the stage. But if a performer says, "Look, you can do what the hell you want. I'm not here to tell you what to do. But if you do this, you're gonna get screwed up,"
Yeah, so I guess, in a way, it's a real test of how respected you are on stage when you tell people to cool it, to see if they follow your lead or not.
Maybe. You have an awful lot of intuitive or something power when you're on stage. I mean, your adrenaline is at about 99 9/10. And you can really, if you have to, push your weight around.
Now, this doesn't happen at concerts now, right? At John Doe concerts.
Not at John Doe concerts, but I'm sure when X plays again, it will.
Well, what's it like to be playing with X again? Is it a different experience now? Do you feel that you're each bringing different things to the music than you were in the 70s or early 80s?
There's a lot more latitude in music, because we've Xene and Tony have done a lot of acoustic music on Xene's solo records. I think we've all learned how to be better songwriters. We're under a lot of pressure because we have to come up with something truly amazing. But I think we're responding to that in the songs. On the other hand, music is more open to what we did in the late 70s, early 80s, now than it was then. There's an underground that is really big. I mean, look at Jane's Addiction and Nirvana and Red Hot Chili Peppers. And I mean, I think the more radical you make music, the further to the left or right or up or down, the more successful it will be today.
That's
cool.
Well, I think we're all set. It was really fun to talk with you.
Same here.
X plans to have a new album out in August. John Doe stars in the new film, Roadside Prophets, which opens in New York this Friday.